This week we'll have a Chanukah shiur. Whoever likes Chanukah. Okay, so page 198, we're going to look at the story of Yosef. We're actually going to do something that's going to take us over a few parashios, but let's just first get a quick overview of the parasha. Vayeshev, we begin with the next number of parashios, Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash. All these parashios are centered around the relationship between Yosef and his brothers, and all begins this morning. When Yosef is having these dreams, which we're going to come back to. But the pasuk says at the bottom of page 198, Yisrael hav es Yosef mikol banav. Yosef seems to give more favoritism to Yosef. Ki ben zikunim hulo. What is a ben zikunim? Either it means old age, he had a child in his older age, or it means he was the one that served Yaakov by his side. That's the Ramban says. He was the guy. Everybody's got a guy. So Yaakov's guy was Yosef, and he makes him this ksonas pasim. Now look at page 200, and the brothers can't even talk to him. So they hate him. They hate him because one seemed more loved than the other. So that's why the pasuk says in Kiseitze, a person has two wives, achas ahuva v'achas sinua. One he loves and one he hates. What does it mean? That doesn't make any sense, right? Why are you laughing? It's in the Torah. So you're like my students, when they hear like a weird Amora's name, they start laughing at him. I say, what? That would be Eliza. 1,000%. So why, meaning achas ahuva, why is one hated? It's not really hated. Why is one hated? Because if one is loved, you can't share that with, right? So that's what's happening here. They obviously feel loved, but because Yosef is given this extra treatment, they feel hated. So Yosef has these dreams. Now in these dreams, which we'll talk about a little bit later, he shares these dreams with them. And the first dream is on Pasuk Zayin, V'hine anachdum alumim alumim besoch ha-sodeh, V'hine kam alumasi. We're all these sheaves were in the field. V'gam nitzava. And what happened? All of their sheaves were bowing down to mine. They're very upset with him. Pasuk Ches, V'yom lo achav hamaloch temloch alinu. Wow, you're so great. Imshol Tim Shalban, you're gonna rule over us. Vayosivo Otsnos, and they hate him even more. Then he has another dream. This dream is about not just about the 11 sheaves, but in addition to 11, we have the sun and the moon. And all the stars. And Pasuk Yud, what does he do again? Tells them the dream, and they get very, very upset with him. And this page ends. Pasuk Yod Aleph, V'yaviv Shamaris Hadavar. Yaakov still waited to see what would happen. Why does Yosef decide to tell his brothers these dreams? We're going to talk today about Yosef and his different dreams. So why does he tell specifically these dreams to his brothers? What was he lurking to gain? Make himself seem, look at me. That's odd, because what's Yosef called? Hatzadik. That doesn't seem like a very tzaddik thing to do, right? Like, you know, when you give somebody a sportsmanship award, it's not the guy that's making everybody else feel bad that they lost. So why is Yosef telling his brothers the dream? So look at what I share with you here. This is not what we're going to talk about, but it's important to know. One is from Rav Hirsch, and one is from the Rav. A very, very important piece. First, Rav Hirsch says, Yosef told his brothers, in my dream, we were not so divided. We were united. We worked together, piling up the small sheaves into large heaps in the middle of the field. I was prepared to add my own to the large common heap, but my sheaf could not be moved. And he says in the next paragraph, this is a perfect portrayal of an isolated individual who towers in stature of his brothers. They're all gathered around him. And what he says in the next paragraph in the bold is that Yosef is saying, we have to change. What was their profession now? They were shepherds. That's what they did. But their destiny to become an agricultural nation was still in the distant future. If farming was so much in Yosef's thoughts and even dreamed about it, how then he must have only known about it because who told him about it? His father. My father. So they get more upset with him. But then look at what Rabbi Soloveitchik says. The Rav, in a very, very famous speech, that was put into an essay called The Rav Speaks, the Rav has what's called the Chamesh Drashot, but a number of speeches Rabbi Soloveitchik gave about the state of Israel. And one of the most famous is the speech about Yosef. He compares Yosef and what he does with his brothers to the early Mizrahi movement. The early Mizrahi movement and the early Zionists, you know, we're even talking early 1900s, we're saying we got to move. We got to get to Israel. If we don't get to Israel, bad things are going to happen. And everybody else was telling them,
Africa.
Wow, we're fine. Oh, forget Africa. We're fine. Everything is great here. Things are fine. We're, don't worry so much about the... Everything just seems perfect. And only the Mizrahi who said, we got to get out of here, not just because it's not great in Europe, but because we need to get to Israel. Where would we have gone if they weren't there? If they weren't there settling the land, where would we have gone in 1945? What would have happened? Who knows? So this is what the Rav says. What did Joseph seek? To what did he aspire? What troubled him? The answer is an obscure feeling of insecurity. Now you have to remember, Yosef's father is Yaakov. Yaakov's father is? Great. Yitzhak's father is? Okay, so we're not that far removed from a treaty which God says to Avraham, there will be a time in Jewish history when you will leave this land and you will go to a foreign land. That it's not a good land, and you're going to serve there. It's going to be really hard. Eventually, in the Bris Ben HaBesarim, God says you will be brought back. You have a lot of wealth. So Yosef keeps thinking, when is that going to happen? Are we ready for when that's going to happen? Are we prepared? Are we ready to adapt? And the brothers are saying, we're fine. Everything is fine. The biblical Joseph, the Rav says, was not persuaded that Yaakov dwelt in the land of his father's wanderings would endure for long. The words, your seed shall be strangers in an alien land, kept tolling in his ears. He saw himself and his brothers in an alien environment, far from Canaan, in new circumstances and under new conditions of life. In this dream he saw we were binding sheaves, which means we're not shepherds anymore. We're now being in the agricultural world. Are we ready for that? Do we know what we're doing? We were integrating a new economy with new styles of living, characteristics, and laws. Basically, he dreamt of a new framework within which the unity of the family could be preserved even in the far-flung places where the creator of the universe would scatter them. And he was constantly preoccupied with that. The next paragraph says, what about the brothers? The brothers did not understand him. They looked upon the future as a continuation of the present. What a great line. That the brothers thought, everything's fine. If it's been fine, it's gonna be fine. Right? If you're not thinking how, when things are going to change, not only that, they knew things were going to change. This is not saying, you know, things have, whatever, our company is running great. We don't need to fix anything. You should always be asking yourself what we could fix. But leaving that aside, they knew it would get bad. They knew God said you're going to end up down in Egypt or somewhere. So they, and therefore, look at the last paragraph. The biblical Joseph relates, and behold, the sun, the moon, and the oven stars bow down to me, which means there is a secular, great, and powerful technology creating wonders and changing the foundations of our life. Even it is true that in Canaan we can get along without it. His secular culture entails destructive elements, many negative and perverse aspects. We're going to have to relate to it, meaning, so the first dream was our nation will be changed. We're not going to be shepherds. We're going to be farmers. We're going to be in the world of agriculture. And the second dream is, our world's going to change. We're going to be thrown out of the shtetl. We're going to be done with this little cocoon of... Where were they now? They were living with Yaakov. Things were amazing. They didn't seem to have any problems. So it's fine. And they didn't adapt. And what happens? I'm sorry, I didn't quote for you the word the Rav talked, but the Rav says that's what the Mizrahi movement was. The Mizrahi movement, for all of their issues, which there were issues in the beginning of the Mizrahi movement, but even those that settled the land, you know, like Rav Kook's philosophy of Zionism was that the secular Zionists had a part in it. They helped work the land and get the land ready. Now, we have to fill in the religious part of it, and there is a role of secularists, but we have to put in the religious part to it. But the Rav says they were adapting. They knew we can't stay here forever. And if we think that we're fine in Europe, everything is fine, we would have been gone forever. So they moved and they got all ridiculed and mocked. But because they were there, we had a place to go. And that's what he calls the Mizrachiness of Yosef is his ability to figure out how to adapt, which is very true today. Are we prepared when things, you know, change? And listen, all this stuff with technology, you know, this whole project focus, well, even all that aside, if we're very naive and we don't think we're effective at any of these things and we don't learn to adapt, then we get swallowed up by it and we're not prepared. If we're, you know, we have to always be on the forefront of maintaining. That's what the Rav ends with. Of a land not their own. I fear I will not be able to maintain the separation between us and the surroundings. If we will not be prepared for new conditions, the environment will swallow us. But if we think of the future, then we can plan. And that is what Yosef does. When Yosef, 20 years later, is the head of Egypt, or the second in command, what does he do when he brings the brothers down? He gives them their own land. He knows you have to maintain your identity. Okay.
But here are the yeah. brothers. Maybe he should have left out parts of the dream, like the bowing down to the one. You know what I'm saying? He could have talked about the agriculture and the... But it was hard for them to see past that part.
Correct. So, you're... Yes. Meaning the... The Rav here is not talking about the brother's response to it. The Rav is saying, what was Yosef, what was being conveyed to me? Yosef is clearly the leader. He's chosen by Yaakov as the assistant. So Yosef has a certain leadership skills, and he's trying to tell them, listen, our lives are going to change. Yeah, so why does he not exactly like tell it to them like that? That's a good question. In general, in the Torah, you know, things aren't always as straightforward as we'd like them to be. Do we have visions of things that we see and we know we need to act on, but we leave it, you know, chalked up to a dream? So you're right, it would have been easier if you sat them down around a table and said this. But, you know, yeah, but the Rav's point is more about Yosef, right? The brothers get upset, and Yaakov does not do a very smart thing, because if you look at page 202, as the Psukim continue, Yosef is sent to go find his brothers, which is not a really great idea, because the brothers are mad at him. You don't go to somebody when they're angry. And they finally get to Yosef, and to Lisa's point that the brothers did not see Yosef's message. Look at Pasuk Yud Ches. So first, Vayar Oso Merachok. They see him from afar, Vayisnakulu Oso Lahamiso, and they want to kill him. Pasuk Yud Tes says, Vayomer Ish Alachiv Hinei Bal HaChalomos. What do they call him? He's the dreamer. All he's thinking about is, you know, how he's better than us. And, right? Or in English, it's the Bala Chalomos. But in Hebrew, it's Bala Chalomos. He's coming, and therefore they tell him, what are we going to do to him? It's a crazy thing. Now, we've talked in years past, which we won't do today, but why do they kill him? Why? Why do they think that's the right thing to do?
Because then he can't talk to them and pretend that he's better than them.
Could be. That seems very harsh on the brothers. It seems, you know, which we come back to, you know, later about, you know, with Sarah Haruge Malchus and all those things. But it could be. It could be that they're just very upset with him. It's also possible that they think they're doing the right thing.
Look at the two brothers who went after.
Right? Correct. Yeah. They thought that was the right thing. Either that was done out of anger, or it was done because they felt they were justified. The brothers might think they're justified. We need to get in fact, if we look all the way down, which we're not going to do this, but if you look in Parshas Vayechi, there isn't a really a moment in which everybody's good. Yosef doesn't really say, I'm good with it. Yosef eventually says, it was all in God's plan, which could be a nice way of Yosef saying, she has really great midos, but I don't want to go out again. Meaning, yeah, it's all God's plan, but why'd you try to kill me and throw me away? Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if they look back in time, there was always a bad.
Oh, okay, so Aurelius pointing out is what many Mefarshim point out, and that is, now, I'll take Aurelius' point to the next level, and that is, what Yosef is, okay, thrown to the pit, everything happens, the next Yubsukim tells us he's thrown to the pit, they come back, all of these things, we know, he's sold to a number of people, they come back, he's not there, the Midyanim and the Midanim and the, everybody, it's, the brothers don't actually sell him, because they come back to the pit and it's empty. Somebody pulls him out. Eventually, if you look at page 206, you'll see that there are people at the bottom of 206. There's the Ishmaelim involved, the Midyanim. Then you have the final pasuk here says they are the Midanim, which are different than the Midyanim. The Midanim sell him to Mitzrayim, to Potiphar. Now, everybody wants to know, why is it that Yosef never tries to phone home? Yosef never, 20 years, Yosef doesn't call back. Everybody's upset at Yosef. If anything, now the brothers go home, and what do the brothers tell Yaakov?
He's killed.
He's dead. Look, here's his coat with blood on it. Now, what really said is that in every generation there's been a reject. Who are the rejects so far? So, Yishmael, Esav, makes sense. Now, we thought maybe Esav and Yaakov would not be. Clearly there was a reject. So, what is very plausible that Yosef thinks? Who's the reject? He's the reject. And what proof does he have? Well, there's been a reject in every generation. When I got really upset at my when my brothers got really upset with me and walked away in anger, what did my father do? No, not he sent me to them, which means that maybe who's involved? Yaakov. So what do you mean, why does Yaakov not call home? Yaakov makes sense for not calling home, which is why, Yosef, which is why at the end, when Yosef wants to bring the brothers back, he doesn't write it when he sees the brothers 20 years later coming in. He's like, oh, hey, it's me. Yosef wants to make sure that he's not the reject. Right, he wants to make sure that all the brothers are good to go. So it's very possible that Yosef does feel that he could be a reject, and that's why he doesn't really intend ever to to try to reach out.
And likewise, the other way, the brothers can think that he.
The brothers could think very well. Yeah, 100%.
But the brothers never saw reject.
Correct. So you're right. It could be that the throwing into the pit was their way of right. Say lechunim v'hargeyu. So either you're right that this wasn't the 100% approach is no way.
And from Yosef's point of view,
right? From Yosef's point of view, it makes sense. From the brothers, it doesn't make sense because they had nobody told them. Although their only defense is that they thought Yosef was too much. He was too haughty. He was too full of himself. He was too arrogant, and it's breaking the fiber of the family. Everybody was great, and this one guy is messing everything up. So if we get rid of him, that's why the brothers seemed to feel justified in their actions. The fact that they're eating lunch in an earshot of where they're throwing him in the pit, right? Ve'yesh bar lechem, it's like odd. So you're right. Yosef thinks this, but not the brothers. The brothers do not think they have precedent for getting rid of him. They also need to be told, right? God tells Avraham, kick Yishmael out. Avraham doesn't want to. Rivka has to convince Yaakov, steal the brachos from Esav. So there's no way the brothers would have thought they were 100%. Okay, the next parsha in the next story in the parsha is the story of Yehuda and Tamar in page 208. Just point out something very fascinating in these psukim. If you look at this, the first pasuk on the top of 208, the pasuk tells us. Yehuda goes down. He went down. Now, what does this sort of mean? He went down and he meets this person, this Vayet Ad Ish Adulami. He meets this person from an Adulamite man whose name was Chira. Now, Rashi tells us, if you look at the right column, Rashi tells us, now Yehuda's not in a great place. He goes down. Things have gotten bad from worse. He's in a bad place in his life, and he was this person. Rashi says Ad Ish Adulami. Rashi just tells us Nishtatefimo. What does that mean? He was his shutav. He was his partner. He was a guy. He was a friend. He wasn't anybody great. But what we see from here, and if you psuk him later, hold on. Yeah, look at the bottom of page 208. You find for one of the first times in Tanakh the word friend. Look at the last pasuk. He loses his wife. And who shows up again? Chira. Re'ehu. Now he's a Re'ehu. Ha'adulami timnasa. Now, does it mean he was his best friend? Were they like BFFs? Absolutely not. He was just a business partner, but he was there for him. A friend in Tanakh, a friend means that you're there for someone. Does it mean you're the closest to them? Doesn't mean you're the closest to them, but it means you are there for them. And that's what this Ish Adulami is doing. He's just there as a source of compassion. It actually comes up again. If you turn the page, it's a little bit out of order. If you turn the page on your sources to Shmuel Aleph, The Navi here is talking about Shaul is pursuing David and he wants to kill him, and David's running for his life. And David runs away, and where does he run? Vayelech David Misham in Shmuel Aleph, El Me'oraz Adulam. He finds some salvation in this cave of Adulam. Throughout Tanakh, there seems to be this idea that provides some type of comfort. Okay. Then you have the psukim continue that after the whole story with Tamar, you have Yosef ends up in Egypt. He's appointed head of Egypt. He gets into a little bit of an iffy situation with Eshes Potiphar, who tries to seduce him. What makes Yosef a tzaddik? A tzaddik means you always do the right thing. Yosef somehow manages always to do the right thing. He's seduced by Potiphar, and he's all he had to do was sleep with her, and everything would have been great. And he says no, and he gets thrown in prison. He could have been the head of Egypt. He could have been higher than he was. He could have been a much more exalted state than he was, and yet he decides not to. That makes him a tzaddik, which is why in the end of time, we have two Mashiachs, where we have a Mashiach ben Yosef and a Mashiach ben David. Now, who does David come from? What Shevet? Yehuda. Now, Yosef comes from, we relate more to a Yehuda and to a David than we do to a Yosef. Yosef is always amazing. He's always doing the right thing. He's always a tzaddik. That is too difficult to relate to. We have two Mashiachs. One Mashiach will come to fight our battles, but one Mashiach will come to usher us into Israel. That Mashiach, Mashiach ben David, is the one who will usher us in. Mashiach ben Yosef will fight the battles. Because when we start the next phase, we need to relate to this leader. Yosef is just, he's amazing. One of the stories, he doesn't get seduced by Ishus Potiphar. He ends up in prison. And it's there in prison that he meets these two people. The baker and the cupbearer. Have you ever used the words cupbearer ever in your life, except for this parasha? No. Huh? Sarah Mashkin, he's the guy that pours the wine. Cup, yeah, I don't know, that's what it's translated as. Now, in prison, just share with you a very interesting thing. In prison, Yosef has this ability. If you look at... hold on. Turn to page 218. Yosef does something here just to show you about this idea of being a friend. Page 218, Yosef is with the Sarah Mashkin and the Sarah Ofim. These two guys in prison, and he sees them. Pasuk Vav. Vayavel em Yosef baboker vayaro sam he named Zoafim. They are stressed. They're full of anxiety. Vayishalas we say paro esher tobe mishmar. He looks at them and he says four words. Madua penechem reim hayom. He simply says to them, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And he provides Yosef, what it says here at the top, what makes Yosef this a guy who can interpret dreams? Oh, is he like, did he have a magic potion? Did he go to like dream school? No, what did he do? He listens. Right, Nechama Leibowitz says, that one reason why he was such a great dream interpreter, psychological one. Yosef based his interpretation on the details of the dream in accordance with what they taught him about the personality of the dreamer. Okay, the dreamer understands himself. Hadn't he really told him the dream and who he was and what he had deserved in judgment? Yosef understood his friends in prison, and he simply listens. I gave a drasha as Pesach Shabbos about listening. That's what Yosef does. He didn't hear the dreams and then tell him what he thought. He listened. He understood their situation, and he provided a listening ear, and that is what eventually will get Yosef out of prison. Okay, now, let's go back to the beginning of the parasha for a second. I want to show you something that I think is interesting to note and about the progression of Yosef. Yosef is a tzaddik. We know. Yosef has three sets of dreams that appear to him, actually. There are three sets of dreams. What are the three sets of dreams? Not that he dreamed, but there are three dreams that appear in Yosef's life. The first is what? So that was what we talked about in the beginning. Right, that's on page 200. Those are the dreams that happened to him. Okay? Then, what's the second set of dreams? The Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Ofim. And the third is Paro in next week's Parsha. When Paro has the dreams, if you look at the beginning of Parsha's Miketz, or if we're going to do Chanukah next week, we're not going to do Miketz, but in the beginning, Paro has these dreams. And he needs an interpreter. And if you look at page 224, Yosef is called out of prison to interpret these dreams. Pasuk Tezvav tells us, they shave him, they make him look good, they bring him to Paro. Page 224, Vayomer Paro Yosef, achalom chalamti. I have these dreams, upotere nosi oso, no one can give me an interpretation. So interpret this dream for me. And Yosef says, it's not me, it's God. Okay? Yosef has three dreams. So, it's not just that he has three dreams. Yosef progresses throughout these three dreams. There's a Rav in Israel, he works in a number of yeshivos in the Gush, and in Renana, and among other organizations, Rav Tamir Granot. And he has an article in which he shows the progression, not of the dreams Yosef has, but to Yosef's reaction to the dreams. If you look at don't worry, go to the sheet set. Go back to the beginning of the parsha. Yosef has these dreams. What does he do with this dream? What does he do with it? He doesn't do much with it. He hears it. He tells it back to them, but there isn't, nothing seems to change much after this dream. He gets the dream and he sort of tells it to them, and then the rest of the story happens. That's dream number one. Then you go, you fast forward to Yosef in prison. Now we're a little, you know, a little bit later down the road in Jewish history. Now Yosef also in the first dream does not change any details, does it? He just, this is what I had, this is what I'm telling you. Okay. So now if you look at page 218, Yosef is in prison. He interprets these dreams. He's a little bit more active now. They tell him the dream. Vayomrei lo, you look at look at Pasuk Ches. So they say to Yosef, Vayomrei lo, chalom chalamnu. So now, not only is it's not Yosef's dream, they're telling Yosef, I had this dream of Foser Enoso, which is the exact words in next week's Parsha. Vayomrei lehem Yosef, halo Elokim pisronim, sabruna li. Tell me what happened. God will you know, interpret these dreams. They tell Yosef what happens. If you look at Pasuk 12, Yud Beis, Vayomer lo Yosef zeh pisrono. Here's your interpretation. Shloshes asaregim, shloshes yomim. It's 3 days, and 3 more days you're going to be called back. And he takes the dreams that he was told. He doesn't just spit back information. It's not a recall test. It's not Yosef saying, "Oh, you told me this. This is what it is." No, Yosef says, this is what your dream means. It means you're going to be brought back to Paro, and you're going to have the following is going to happen to you. Then you go to a little bit further. We now go to page 224. Yosef is now summoned out of prison. Paro has all of these magicians and people that can do all of these things, and he's told, and Yosef here does not just interpret them. Yosef decides he's going to more act on them. He acts on these dreams. So let's see what Yosef says here. I'm sorry, turn to page 226. The top of 226. Vayomer Yosef el Paro. So now Yosef, he heard two dreams, and he says, it's not really two dreams, it's really, this is much more active on Yosef, this part right now, right? This is big. And he says, Chalom Paro Echad, it's one dream, es asher alokim osehi gil le Paro. Sheva paros ha tovos, sheva shonim heino, at 7 good years, 7 bad years, okay? And what's going to happen? Now, what does Yosef do now? He doesn't just interpret. What does Yosef do following this? What?
He gives a plan.
What's his plan? Whoa, 1 second. He tells Paro, if you look in Pasuk 29, Hine sheva shonim ba'os, the 7 years are coming, it will be great. B'chol eretz Mitzrayim, b'kamu sheva shnei harav achareihen, but the 7 years following that will be so bad, you won't even remember the good. So what does he tell Paro in Pasuk Lamed Aleph? V'lo yivada sava ba'aretz b'nei ha'ra'av, you won't even have anything. Ki chaved hu ma'od. Pasuk 32. Why did you hear it again? Because it's going to happen. Get ready. So what should you do, Paro? You should find somebody to help you. Wow, what an amazing idea. Guess who that could be? That could be me. And not only as... and he tells him, if we do it and we save, and if you look at 228, that's exactly what happens. Not only was it good, he interpreted the dreams correctly, but he says, "Vayomer paro al avodav, kanimtzach hazeh ish asheruach elokim bo." Is there anybody as good in this world as this guy Yosef? Yosef here progresses in his dreams. He first hears dreams and just spits them back. Here's what I got. He then hears the dreams of the Sar Ofim and the Sar Hamashkim and interprets them. But still, where is Yosef at the end of that? Still in prison. The final dreams, Yosef hears the dream, interprets the dream, and acts upon it. And because he acted upon it, guess what happens? He becomes the head of Egypt, which allows him to save the Jews. So let me share with you from Rav Tamir Granot. Rav Granot says the following. We noted previously the dual significance of Yosef being the master of dreams. He's the one and a dreamer, and he's the interpreter of dreams. An examination of the development of the story reveals that its turning point is the stage where Yosef turns into the interpreter, and thus his status is upgraded, to the point where ultimately, at the end of the process, he is second in command to Egypt. This event is the crux of the turning point. And then he says the following in the underline. Until this point, Yosef has not been a personality who determines his own path and is active within the events. Rather, actions happen upon him. He's a dreamer. He's dispatched by his father. He's cast into a pit. He's sold, head of Potiphar, drawn towards sin, thrown into the dungeon. Only when he proposes to Pharaoh's ministers that he will interpret the dream that he begins to make a change. The dramatic turning point is obviously when he not only responds to Pharaoh's demand that his dreams be explained, but he advises him. And he says in the last underlines, in other words, the transition from passivity to activity in relation to dreams. Right, so why is it, like, to Lisa's question, in the beginning, we don't sort of hear Yosef just say straight out, hey, guys, this is what we need to do. Because the Torah is not about a history lesson in what happened. It's about how we learn from it. Do we have dreams that we hear about, but we leave them just as dreams? They stay as dreams. We don't act upon them. Right, you know, Rabbi Brand, when he was here a few weeks ago, he talked about Stephen Hill, right, the great, guy from Law and Order, but also the who could have been one of the greatest actors, even though I said this in Rosh Hashanah a few years ago. Of course, you remember it. Everybody, Brand's like, oh my gosh, I never heard that before. I'm like, wow, that was nice. Okay, whatever. It was only 2 years ago, but it's okay. But he was somebody who acted upon it. He wanted to be a firm Jew, and he acted upon those dreams. And that's Yosef going from passivity to action. So we see from the beginning of this week's parasha to next week's parasha, he goes from being the determined to the determiner. And Yosef has been pushed around at the mercy of his environment and now becomes its director. That's the goal. Can I be not just a dream interpreter? Can I not just tell you what your dream should be or think about my dreams, but can I actually act upon them? And here you got a guy, Yosef, who for the most of his life was the least active, pushed around, thrown around, just wherever he ended up, that's where he was. In a pit, in Potiphar's house, next to Yaakov, didn't make a difference. And all of a sudden now, he becomes the head of... Is that because all along he had it in him? Yeah, but also because he understands that as things are happening to him, I gotta make change. When I thought about this, I thought about at the end of his life, right before he... Not that long before he passed away, Fox News did an interview with Shimon Peres. And as part of what they... There's amazing stories with Shimon Peres about sort of the dedication of his life to the Jewish people, you know, how, he met the Chafetz Chaim and how he told him to make sure that you stay dedicated to Jewish education, and how when he came to Israel, he was, you know, not religious growing up. His family was. That's why he was so dedicated to Jewish education. But he has this one line, he has this one little paragraph there where he says the following. I took it out for you here. He said, dream. Don't just study. He said, dream. Imagine. Don't be afraid to take a risk. Look for new answers, he said. Look for new questions. We have to have new questions. What are real capacities of human beings? Not the robot, but the human being. You can build an excellent robot, but the robot will lack one thing. He'll never have a vision. And if you don't have a vision, you don't have enthusiasm. And if you don't have enthusiasm, you don't use your hidden capabilities. People ask me, how can you go on? And I say, this is a great line. I have to make one suggestion to you. Make a count of how many achievements you did in your life. Then make a second account. How many dreams do you have in your brain? If the number of dream exceeds the number of achievements, you're young. If not, you're finished. Meaning, as long as you can still have more dreams than achievements, for a person who led his life dedicated to the Jewish people and the state of Israel, to at the end of his life still be asking himself, what more can I dream? What more do I want? You know, often the word dream, I think, sometimes has this negative connotation because we leave it as a dream. So we talk about having a vision and having a dream, but sometimes it stays as just a dream. It's never actualized because I would love to one day. And sometimes our dreams are way over-exaggerated, right? I want to, you know, be a great tzaddik, and I want to be a tremendous... Okay, but sometimes our dreams can be more realistic. That's okay. It's okay to accomplish our dreams. And that's Yosef. Yosef goes from having dreams to actualizing them. And he doesn't stop. I mean, Yosef's life just gets started now. Now he's going to save the Jewish people. He's going to provide a framework and a home where they can live. He's going to reunite them together, because until they meet again in Parshas, you know, reunite at the end of Vayigash, they are still upset with each other. He unifies them. He allows them to maintain security and holiness in Egypt. And that's actualizing dreams. As long as your dreams can outnumber your achievements, you're still going to be okay. All right, have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you.